Let me tell you just a little bit about our presenters this evening. We have two. The first one is Eduardo Rosales. He's from Honduras. His experience, I don't like to explain much about that because that's kind of their job. So he was a pilot in the Honduras Air Force and his plane crashed, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. We are privileged to have our past president, Martin Tanner, here this evening. I want to tell you a little bit about Martin. As Bill was saying, this organization has been going on for 17 years. Martin is one of the founding fathers. I was thinking he must have started this right out of high school. Anyway, so Martin's been doing this for a long time. Has a radio talk show on KSL Sunday evenings. You may have heard him there, and in that position, he's interviewed a variety of individuals that have had near-death experiences, both locally and nationally. He has a wealth of experience, and we're always delighted to have him to come and share his experiences and insights with us. So without further ado, let me turn some time over to Eduardo, who will tell you a little bit about his experience, and then we'll have some questions and answers for a little bit, turn the time over to Mark.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. I'm coming to convince the right here. I'm coming to impress somebody here. With all respect to you, this is true experience what happened to me. I will tell you in a way. When I was a kid, I always liked learning to fly a plane. When I was a teenager, same way, I wanted to fly a plane. Soon I graduated from high school, 1975. I make 2 years in preparation in the university. 1977, I jumped to Honduras, of course. So my promotion was 77. I graduated from second lieutenant in 1979 in Honduras, of course. At that time, we are a poor country, and we don't have those kind of planes like the United States have right now. We just have all those kind of Second World War planes, like Mustang B-51, Lightning P-38, Corsair, all this stuff like that. What is my training flight? I fly the Corsair with four more guys. We was over at Tegucigalpa, Honduras, about 15,000 feet, and we was really combat maneuvers that day, and we was fully loaded. My Corsair have four bones, 500 pounds. That means 2,000 pound explosive, plus four rockets, air to ground. Plus four rocket air to air. So we was fully loaded. We do some kind of maneuvers, if somebody know about it, loops, rolls, stuff like that. And one of those loops, my plane almost was inverted like this. And I check my wing, check the speedometer, all stuff like that. And then just boom, boom. That means two cylinders going, And that kind of play with that kind of low when two cylinders going, I tell you that. Corsair, it's just like a piano flight. It just started, lost altitude and, just coming down. And the first thing you have to do for sure is make it us call to the air tower and say, emergency landing. And that's exactly what I did, I make it as whole and say, Air Force, emergency landing. Before this is kind of, I don't forget, but it's kind of situation I have in my personal life. My son, he born 2 weeks before this flight, you know, before this spring. I was a party guy those 2 weeks, you know. I was drinking and do some things I'm not supposed to do, but I did it because my son, he just born 2 weeks ago, and I get promotion in my squadron. I was in good shape. Anyway, when I make those calls to the tower, I remember I say to myself, something going to happen to me. It's something serious. And anyway, it's two approach, you know, short final, long final, and short final. I just doing short final. When I was in short final, I'm talking about a quarter mile of the runway, and I asked the air traffic controller how everything looks like, you know, because I know if I crash that plane in that concrete runway with those kind of bombs, with those active bombs, not just myself going to die, going to be a big explosion and something else going to die, but it would be a disaster. The air traffic controller told me, go around, because one of your wheels is still no down. Ladies and gentlemen, as I tell you this, that Corsair coming at 107 miles an hour. I tried. But I know it's no more power in the plane. No more power in the plane. At that time, I feel coming in my mind. I see my grandpa face. I see my grandma face. I see my dad face, my mother. All my brothers and sisters. We are 16 in family anyway. Plus, all my friends. And I see my first son, face, and I see my baby Emerson. He just born 2 weeks ago. When I see that face of my baby, the plane still flying 170 miles an hour to the Concord runway, and I make a quick prayer. I just say, God, please, don't let me die in this crash. I want to raise it out my boy. I want to see my boy again. Soon as I say that, I believe was, matter of fact, a second, maybe 2 to 5 seconds. I'll feel over my hand. I'll feel another hand over my hand. What kind of the hand was no heavy, no light, but it was a hand. And the best part of that is, a plane without power, see the approach for the concrete runway. That plane, he just make it like this. Bus guy to the emergency landing. To the emergency landing for a crash. At this time, it's unbelievable. It's almost impossible. With that kind of heavy loaded, with that kind of situation, you know, with a failure in the engine, it's just almost impossible. One plane, almost a low altitude, almost in stall, do that. But anyway, happened, and happened for sure. What happened was, soon the plane was over the emergency landing crash, that plane used a smash the green area like a didn't have a gear. And the first thing, the two wings disintegrated completely, just boom. And then the rest is kind of very traumatic for myself because I'll feel, you know, how the fuselage of the plane coming through to my body and start feel the scope and stuff like that. Still the plane disintegrated, the plane doesn't stop. Was kind of a ditch, you know, almost in the middle. I don't say in the middle, like about 3/4 of the runway is kind of a ditch, you know. Not really deep, but just in case the plane will stop, just that plane hit the ditch so hard, really, really hard. Part of the engine coming out. When I say really hard, because I believe it was the last part of my sensation when I, my head, you know, even I had the helmet, the heat was so strong. I just knock out. I mean, I knock out, but I still had my mind, you know, thinking about it, what's going on. I remember I was bleeding by my mouth very bad, from my nose, from my ears. I feel those cuts. I feel some kind of pain in my legs, in my arms, stuff like that, my chest. Very, very bad, very bad. I remember those sounds of the agony, you know. Blow all around and pass away. I don't know for how long. And then, this is kind of spring, you know, I very honestly to you, happened more than 30 years ago. And that's the first time I'm talking about it. So I pass the knockout, I feel something coming out my chest. Something coming out my chest. I don't know for exactly what's going on, but this is truthfully what happened. I start feel going up and going up and going up. I remember very clearly when the ambulance coming and doctors, all kind of captain and stuff like that, and they say, he's gone, he's gone. And at that time, I keep going up, I keep going up, I keep going up. I can see that my body is still in the plane. I can see all those persons around the plane, you know, and keep going up, keep going up. I don't feel my body for sure, but I can see everything what's going on down there. At some moment, I get scared. I get scared because I still ask myself, what's going on? What happened? Why my body down there? Why I can see all the stuff happen? I was scared, seriously, you know. And I don't know what kind of the altitude, I get. But when I start seeing the dark, I don't know what kind of dark were I talking. But it was dark, you know. It's not as clear like in the beginning. Was dark. Soon I get the dark area or dark altitude, I was scared hell. Very serious, very honest. I was scared. And then I go into. I see the tunnel. I see a tunnel, you know. When I start going up and up in the dark side, I see a tunnel. Was kind of a tunnel, was not really dark, and was not really light, but it was blue. Soon I get close to that tunnel, I was like a absorption, you know, I was absorption, my body was absorption, go through to the tunnel, and I don't feel my body, but I can feel energy. I can feel energy around myself at a high speed, you know, really, really high speed. I align myself. It's like I say, I hear something on the tunnel, or I see somebody on the tunnel. I don't hear nothing on the tunnel. I don't see nobody in the tunnel, but I feel my energy in the tunnel. What happened? Through to the tunnel, I don't know for how long, I don't know what short time, a long time, I really don't know, but I feel the energy. When I try to say that, I don't know how long or how short, because I really don't know, but almost in the end of that tunnel, I can see a really, really bright light, like a bowl. But no ball of fire, just shiny and briny light. And soon I cross to the tunnel, ladies and gentlemen, with all my honesty, I feel some peace. I feel some harmony. Like never in my life feel before. Was so peaceful. Like you like to stay there. The harmony was so nice. You like to stay there. I don't know for sure. Is I going in the direction of the light, or the light coming in direction to me? But as soon as I get more close, I have a better perception of the light. And I can see through to the light, and I see like a human being for you. I don't like to say what Jesus Christ or something like that, because I'm not talking about religion. But I feel it was somebody inside the ball of the light, you know. I believe it was somebody over there. I don't like to say too that was a welcome to me, but it looks like it. Soon I get more close to the light, I start to see thousands behind the light. Somebody here is LDS. When you see the second coming of Jesus Christ with the panda, a jersey, something like that. My perception was not real clear. It really was people, or really was clouds in form of the people. When my perception was, I feel and I hear some kind of music. And the music was like a spiritual music, like a celestial chorus, stuff like that. Very, very neat. That's all I very, very clearly remember. I don't know how long this thing happened. But when I come back, I was in the Houston, Texas Military Hospital. This thing happened over Tegucigalpa, Honduras, to Houston, Texas, about 2,700 miles, something like that. Very honestly, the comeback was painful because I start feel all those cuts. I start feel the pain of the trauma heat. I was all around with nails, cables, swells, stuff like that. The doctor and the people talking about this, they say, it's impossible. Impossible a human being, a human body, survive with that kind of, those kind of crash plane. And I hear from you talking about this experience. With all my respect to you, I don't have any reason for lying myself to come and lie to somebody else. I don't know nobody in this room. I just met David Larson about 2 days ago, and I respect that personality. In the same way I respect to him, I respect to everybody sitting over there. My conclusion about this kind of experience, I still ask myself, why me? This is a gift of God. God exists no matter what. He's up there. And it's a society up there. I feel that. This is my experience. This is no history. This is no comment from a book or something like that. This is my spirit. With all respect for you.
I understand this is the first time you've shared your experience in public.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank you, and I want to point out some things. I've been listening to near-death experiences for a lot of years, had my own, and I can tell you that this experience probably is one of the most special, because I think it's one of the purest experiences that we've had shared with our group in a long time. And the thing that's really important are the elements that he shared with all of us. And that is number one, the separation from his body, the confusion that that brought on, the experience of the tunnel, which not everybody experiences, the light, and then being in the presence of a divine being. And I kind of understood, did you have some kind of a review where you were seeing family members and maybe certain aspects of your life as well?
No, not in that experience, but later, I survived another two-plane crash. In one of those, even I was in the hospital, very clear, you know, very, no damage, like in this kind of experience. But and when I dreaming, yeah, I see my grandpa's stuff like that, like they like it talking to me, yeah. But no, was this experience, was in another kind of experience. Definitely, yes.
Well, I certainly, like I said, I want to thank you and, you know, tell you that, I mean, your experience was, you know, really touched me. And like I said, I want to say it's probably one of the most special experiences I've heard in a long time because of the elements that you had in your experience and the fact that you felt comfortable in sharing it with our group for the first time. Thank you.
Well, thank you, you guys. I appreciate that.
Before we start, we're going to do a few questions if you want to take some questions.
Sure.
I wondered if other people were in the plane with you.
No, just myself. That kind of plane is it's just monoplane.
I've forgotten how small it was.
Just one seat. The combat plane, for sure. Just one seat.
And how long were you in the hospital?
72 hours in coma. I mean, it's 3 days.
How long did it take you to recover?
Thinking very long. They're very long. I believe it was about months and a half in the hospital for recovery.
Did you have any choice in coming back? Did you realize that you could come back, or could you go either way, or any of that?
That's a good question. Like what I say, was very painful to come back. I'm not sure if I like to stay there, but when you have this kind of experience, it's very unique, you know. You have to be there. For sure, very honest to you, lady, if I have a choice, better be there, no pain.
When did any of the ordnance explode? That sounds like a miracle.
Thanks, God. I'm very honest to you. Well, that was the reason. I was very, very glad nothing happened. So,
how did it affect your life when you came back? Did you find yourself looking at life differently?
Definitely, yes. I give more priority to spiritual things. I give more priority to my kids, to my family, be more close, you know, be more close to each other. My mind is more clear. When I'm talking about clear, it's clear in this way. Before this experience, when I read one of those books, those confused books, it was hard to understand. Now it's just like that. Just I get it, books and a situation I can handle before just my mind is more sharp.
First of all, thank you for sharing with us your story. And I wanted to ask you, you said that you had another plane wreck after this one?
I did, yeah. We was in a mission for a community. We transport some kind of pieces of the big bridge and yeah, we crashed in a Charlie C-130. The captain died. I was second seat. 25 people in the back of the plane died too. Nothing happened. I get good stuff like that, but nothing like the experience I shared before. Other thing I feel after that experience, I like like I'm protecting, you know, because it's not very common a pilot or a person survive a three crash plane. It's no more, you know. I feel like a god, you know. They have a mission for me in this air, and I no accomplishment that mission yet. That's how I feel. So I survive another two more crash plane after that.
Oh my gosh, and was this all the time that you were in the service? Just were you all every time in the service?
Or? Yes, all this actually happened when I was in the service. Yeah, I served Honduras Air Force for 10 years.
Did you experience, you know, any other crashes? I know you said that the one that you talked about was the most.
No, just that one, the Corsair when I was solo, when the bombs or stuff like that. Yeah, just that one. So, and then all just get ghosts and drama, but no kind of experience like that. Definitely not.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I bet when I ask you a question, I failed to tell you how your story touched me and how your sincerity came across. And I wanted to thank you so much for sharing that with everyone. It was a great experience to live through. My husband was a pilot for a long time, and I recall some of his experiences, nothing like that, and no crashes, but the near crashes and the experience that you have with flying. So I wanted to thank you for that.
Well, thank you, everybody. Small question. Yeah, welcome.
Do you have any other spiritual gifts? Now that you have had your encounter with your first crash?
Spiritual gift. It's a good question. I believe not. I wish I could have it, but that's the best I can share with you.
Well, a sharp mind, that's great. The other thing is, I'd like to know what your nickname was after surviving three crashes.
Well, I tell you this, lady, after surviving those three crash planes, I get training a lot, you know, around. I was a good pilot. I get training for Marines, Special Forces. And I learned to fly 218. They call it the Warhawk. They called me to go to Iraq. And I fly about 23 missions in Iraq in 1993, Desert Storm. And I hear in front of you talking this and share this experience. So.
I believe you did come back with a special gift. Your mind is more clear, you said. Your mind more clear now?
That's all I feel.
Yeah, that's a special gift. I'd like that special gift. let's see, I was going to ask you, I had passed away after giving birth to a baby, and and I didn't see anything, I don't remember anything, but I had a feeling that I went on the other side. I just wondering, I was left with the feeling that if I ever died, I'd never be afraid again. Is that how you feel too? Because I feel like I didn't even know I died, so why worry about it?
You know what? I believe the question answered that question. I believe that's another special gift. No more afraid to die anymore. So yeah. Don't be scared. Just whatever happened had to happen.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, I was wondering if when you met with the light, was there any conversation or anything that thought to you or any communication whatsoever when you were there?
You say when I see that shiny, brandy light, like I go say, one more time, I know lying myself, I know I can lie to you. No. Just like as I explained to you before. No.
Go ahead. Just out of curiosity, when you entered the tunnel, did you feel any substance to the tunnel, or did it give, or was it rigid, or can you remember anything about that?
When I was in Daytona, was the scary part of the trip. Because after the crash, after I passed away, I guess, everything was in a slow motion. Everything was slow motion. When I believe it was when my energy or when my soul or whatever started going up and up and up and up. That thing was happening in a slow motion, you know, not slow, but was a slow motion. Soon I saw the tunnel, like what I say, I was absorbing like a powerful energy, just like when something sucked me, you know. When I was through to the tunnel, the only thing I can feel was like a, I don't know exactly, it was some water or wind or something, but everything was at like a high speed, you know, like a something like that. And I, honest person, I don't see nothing, I don't hear nothing except like I don't feel my body, you know, everything was like a pure energy, even my face was like energy, you know, it's nothing conserved. It's just energy. I don't know if that answers your question.
When you were on the other side, you felt very good. Then, did anyone tell you you were supposed to come back to Earth?
No.
You just did it voluntarily?
Definitely no. But, like what I say, gentlemen, it's hard to explain, you know, it's just like that. It's just hard to explain, but I talk with all my honesty, all my sincerity. What's kind of peace? It's just hard to explain, you know. One more time, it's a hard choice. I stay there. More peace. More peace, more harmony. Here it's like a painful, but that's what I am right now. Thank you very much.
Okay, that was really great. Thank you so much. I can't think of experiences that I enjoy hearing more than that are straight from the heart and that are pure. And that was wonderful to hear. Thank you so much. I could just go home right now, but a few things to say here. Let me start out by asking a couple of questions. How many people here have had an experience? So we have quite a few. How many have read one book on near-death experiences? Everybody. How many people have read more than 5 books on NDEs? How about more than 10? How about more than 30? I've got a few here. Okay. I remember the first book that I ever read on NDEs was Raymond Moody's Life After Life. It struck me, there was something about it, and I'm sure many of you have had the same experience, where many of the things about it just seemed so real. Being the skeptic that I guess I had to be, hearing about them for the first time, I had all these questions. Why have I not heard about this before? Why aren't there books about this before? Why all of a sudden do we have something happening published in 75? I mean, why isn't this massive literature out there? Because certainly NDEs can't have first happened right around that time period. What's going on here? Why now? And so I decided to explore. I really wanted to believe, but I had some questions. Rang true, but why? And I had the opportunity to hear and talk to a lot of people firsthand. And this would have been in the 80s. I tracked down George Ritchie, who wrote Return from Tomorrow. Talked to him in person several times, listened to him present. And this is a guy, MD, very credible, talked from the heart and told you his experience the same way and with every bit of fervor that he would tell you about walking down the street or any other experience that he would have with all the credibility. Just like you heard tonight. You hear that, no one could believe that the story we heard was made up. It was told from the heart. And I have heard, but will not discuss tonight, several experiences that I do not believe were all true or completely true. After that, I was able to track down Howard Storm and had a great conversation with him about his experience. I know that many of you have heard Howard Storm's experience. The thing that struck me most about his experience was how life-changing it was. This was a guy that was an atheist, kind of a hedonist, and I talked to his wife and said, come on the level, is he making this thing up? And she said, oh no, this drives me crazy. This is not the same man I married. He is totally different. This thing really happened to him. Whatever it was, it really happened to him. Changed his life from being a very self-indulgent atheist to a minister. And I really, through the course of a number of different people I talked to, became absolutely convinced that these experiences are real. Raise your hand if you are absolutely convinced near-death experiences are a real phenomenon. Raise your hand if you believe you've ever heard an experience that's not true or partially not true, or raise your hand if you're a real skeptic still, or you have some serious... Nobody's going to raise their hand. You've got to raise your hand. I do. Okay. As I interviewed a number of people, I tried to come up with what I thought were some earmarks of authenticity. Here are some of the things that I came up with, and perhaps they will be of use to you, and I'll share them extremely briefly. One of them is if somebody is willing to say just what happened to them and not put this huge gloss on it about what it means for the whole world. Our presentation tonight, our discussion tonight, it was so pure and direct. This is what happened to me. He told what happened to him. I'm sure he could have said more even about what it meant to him and the impact that it's had on his life, but he told us the pure experience that he had. And when you hear that, you know you're hearing something that is, in all likelihood, real. When you hear that, I had this experience and it means so many things, then you can be perhaps a bit skeptical. From there, after talking to a number of people, I was able to track down Raymond Moody, meet with him several times, and interview him on the radio. Great guy, fascinating guy, used to live in the South and had this, you know, fun little Southern twang to his voice, and has since moved to UNLV, where he teaches. He's the one that coined the term near-death experience. In some ways, I don't like that term so much. Because it's really not near death, it's kind of like a short-term death experience. People who experience this really, truly, at least most of them, have died. And Raymond Moody, Dr. Moody, also had a lot of initials behind his name, MD, PhD, came up with this list of different elements, many of them which were described tonight. You have the peace and happiness, the timelessness, music, many other things. One of the things that Dr. Moody talked about that was fascinating to me because it fits so much with prior experiences and descriptions that I had seen in different contexts about deity was this concept of love or a peacefulness that was described. That this idea of not wanting to come back, it is so great there. That had a ring of authenticity to it. From there, I talked to a number of people who were skeptics. I wound up interviewing a guy on the radio who was the president of the American Atheist Society. He's just absolutely convinced that these were not true. And I asked him why. He came up with all these explanations. People aren't really dead. Tricks of the mind, drug-induced. He came up with a whole bunch of different ideas. And so I wanted to track down specific examples, specific near-death experiences that I thought overcame those objections. And that's where I wound up meeting Dr. Michael Sabon, who was an MD and a cardiologist in the South. He was involved in the Atlanta study and had done a great book called Recollections of Death. And one of the most fascinating experiences that he had was involving a woman by the name of Pam Reynolds. Raise your hand if you know about Pam Reynolds. Anybody here? Pam Reynolds, fascinating lady, had this horrendous aneurysm in her brain. She consulted with a number of doctors, and they were unwilling to try to operate. It was in such a difficult spot in her brain. She finally found one who was willing to do it. The alternative was death, so she went ahead with the operation, and this is what happened. They lowered her body temperature to 60 degrees. They stopped her breathing. They stopped her heart. They made sure that her brain waves were flat. She was dead. She was clinically dead. And from there, they shaved her head, cut open a hole in her skull, and were able to find in her brain where the aneurysm was and remove it. What happened during that experience when she was absolutely dead, no breathing, no respiration, eyes fixed and dilated, no brain waves, was that she saw most of the procedure. And when she woke up, she was able to describe the instruments that were used that were not, if somebody told you they were going to cut a hole in your skull, you'd kind of think, I don't know what you think about, I picture like a little saw or something. And what she described was more like an electric toothbrush. And in truth, that's the kind of a saw that it was. It looks very much like an electric toothbrush, except it has a little saw on the end. And she was able to describe her Dr. Sabon and many others in great detail things that occurred while she was dead. She was out. There's no way she could have had that information. So, objection one, people aren't really dead, overcome. That one, no question, she was dead. And she, or part of her, was able to overcome it. Another objection that comes up from time to time is the idea that people, while they're out or while they undergoing anesthetic or by some other means, are able to hear about things that are going on around them. So they're not really dead, or some part of them. The last thing to go perhaps is hearing, and so you hear things, or perhaps you hear people describe things. I was able to converse with Dr. Kenneth Ring, who has written an amazing book called Mindsight, Near-Death and Out-of-Body Experiences in the Blind. He talked to a number of individuals who were blind, who had had near-death experiences. One of the most amazing of those was a 45-year-old woman by the name of Vicky Umapek, and she was blind since birth. She had an optic nerve issue that made her completely, totally, utterly blind. She could see nothing from birth, never had. She had a medical procedure, was later able to describe everything that happened to her doctor and Dr. Ring, who chronicled the experience. And it was really, in many ways, quite frightening for her. And she described the experience. It was quite amazing. I've got to read what she said, because I could never say it this way. I had a difficult time relating to seeing. I had never done it before. I had a real difficult time relating to it because it had never happened to me. It was something foreign to me. Let's see, how can I put it into words? It would be like hearing words and not being able to understand them, but somehow knowing they were words, and before you'd ever heard anything before. Somehow it was something new. You never been able to previously attach any meaning to it. Now that kind of shows you how bewildering it was for her to say what had happened to her. She saw things she had never experienced color before, and yet because she could see, she was later actually able to describe things like that. And that to me was absolutely fascinating and amazing. Another researcher who had a huge impact on me, and his wife is here today, Carol Gibson, was Arvin Gibson. I ran into Arvin Gibson, I think, for the first time in 1990 or 91. And I instantly liked Arvin. And he had done a lot of research over many, many years with his wife, Carol. And the thing that impressed me so much about the work that they did was that they listened to what people said, recorded it directly, just as you've heard it tonight, and the experiences were firsthand and presented as firsthand experiences, and they always seem so precious and so untouched and so alive. I thought they were absolutely marvelous. I should also relate, and then I'll wrap things up, that since then I've also found that near-death experiences have been going on for as long as people have been around. There are little tidbits within accounts that have happened several thousand years ago that would lead us to believe that they're near-death experiences. I found experiences from the Middle Ages, which I won't relate tonight, but they are there and they are very much near-death experiences, just described in the language of the day. One of the more fascinating experiences that I was able to track down and read happened by a gentleman in Idaho in 1920. And he first related it and put it on paper in 1934, I believe. It's the same thing. You can see the wording and the information is the same. So all of those objections, which I had originally raised myself and had been raised by others, people weren't really dead. Pam Reynolds was really dead. People were somehow getting information from some other source. Blind people don't get information about vision from any other source. I don't care what it is. I could give you many other examples of that. And then the idea that near-death experiences didn't really start happening until the 70s. That didn't make sense, and of course, research by many, many people has shown that they have been going on for a long, long, long time. I will leave it at that, and thank you for coming tonight, and thank you once again for giving your presentation. If anybody has any questions, I would be happy to field them, but yes.
Bring this up to date. Danion, is it Brinkley?
Danion Brinkley.
What's the latest with Danion? I mean, he wrote three books, didn't he? I read the first two, but what's the latest?
I understand that Danion Brinkley has passed away.
Passed away?
Yeah.
Was he able to build those centers that he talked about and succeed with those?
I do not know the answer to that question. Maybe someone else does.
Second more related question now. I'm not familiar with your radio show, but is your radio show focused on this subject matter?
No. It's called Religion Today. It's on KSL. It talks about all kinds of religious-related issues, but it's not just focused on near-death experiences.
Have you found that a person who has written these kinds of books, once they have a lot of revenue and notoriety, all of a sudden the veil opens and more information comes another book?
You know what? I will politely make one comment about that. Earlier, Betty Eady was brought up. I love Betty Eady, consider her a friend, very sweet lady. I first found her by contacting Seattle Lions and saying to Kim Clark, who was one of the people who had been involved in it for years, could you find me some people who I could interview on the radio who have never talked about their experience before? And one of the people that she found was Betty Eady. And I talked to Betty Eady, and some publisher was listening to the radio show and called me up and said, God, that was really neat. Could I talk to her? And I, you know, I'm clueless. I have no idea about books. So I put them in touch, and they put the book together. And to the best of my knowledge, that was the first time that she had ever given her experience other than perhaps in the ions. And I will just say that if you listen to what she said in her experience and what shows up in her book later, there's a lot more in the book. And there are some reasons for that, you know, publishers and writers and people who get involved, they add more things, but yeah.
We've had a presenter here that talked about his previous lives, and so I was wondering what percentage of people have reported having previous lives.
I don't know the answer to that, but I know it must be very, very, very small, because that did not show up in Ken Ring's research as a huge statistical number.
Are you putting your information down with something you plan to write?
I have never published anything on near-death experiences. Maybe sometime.
Still going out interviewing, meeting new people, doing that, or do you have people who get in touch with you and telling your story because they've heard of you?
Certainly some of each. I, you know, have people refer to me, and I love to find people and hear experiences.
Don't you think that it took a while for these kind of experiences to come out, because a lot of people who talk about it, their family would say, you're crazy and you're bringing a bad name on our family and please don't talk about it?
Oh, no question. When, you know, even when this group here in Utah was founded, most of the people who came were unaware of near-death experiences. And if you brought up the phrase, most people had no idea what you're talking about. You know, that was 18 years ago. And now, people joke about it on Saturday Night Live. You know, it's so widely known. And I think that, you know, like with the internet, there's so many positive things about that and so many negative things.
Just a comment. I tried to decide in my mind, why is it that deity permits this? Because it certainly happens with his permission. And I think that perhaps it's one way that he reminds the world that he's out there. We find virtually every society believes in God, believes in the life hereafter. And I think that's what his prayer reminds us. When we stand before the judgment, we answer, and this gives us one more way, opportunity to straighten our lives out.
Well said. I've never had a near-death experience personally. I enjoy very much reading about them, and they're certainly very, very good promoting. I would never presume to, you know, pass judgment or an idea on why certain individuals have them, but they are very faith-promoting. I love them a lot.
I'm intrigued with your experience. If you had experience in interviewing anyone who his background was Far Eastern or did not have a Christian background, other than, who was the atheist you spoke of earlier?
Howard Stern.
Howard Stern, people like that. But something, someone on the other side of the globe who has no affiliation with Christianity whatsoever, who's had this kind of experience, and what was that like?
I'll answer that with three quick experiences. One is, I spoke with a gentleman from Logan, Utah, late 80s, early 90s, and he was a devout Muslim, absolutely a devout Muslim, and he had had a near-death experience, and certainly he described it in the context of his own background and upbringing and faith. You could just tell it was the same experience. You know, he would never say that he had seen deity. He described the same light and described it as he was giving his opinion that perhaps it was the angel Gabriel or somebody, but it was the same experience. You could just tell. I've spoken with a few people from the Far East, a couple of people who were in their 20s from Japan who were only marginally religious at all, and they had the same kind of description about what happened. Would also say that I've talked to a bunch of kids, and one of the kids that was fun, and I bring this up because, you know, you talk to kids and say, wow, you had this experience, you got hit by a car on your bike and everything. Well, did you die? Oh, no. When you die, that's like when they put you in a box and bury you in the ground. No, I just left my body, and they took it to the hospital, and, you know, so you hear this different experience even from kids who have that. And even beyond our era, you read some of the experiences from the Middle Ages, and that's as different culturally as anything, actually more so than we would find. The one I remember was right now was a guy who died during the plague era, and he talked about walking towards a misty bridge and going across and seeing a light and seeing loved ones, and there was this border, and he couldn't go beyond it, or he would never come back and see his wife again. You know, all the elements are there. They're just described in the cultural trappings of the time. And so perhaps that would answer the question.
Makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming this evening. I'll leave it there.